There's a very deliberate reason why the readings are chosen for this feast day of the Corpus Christi, the body and blood of Christ. The first one from Deuteronomy, you have Moses. He's doing what's termed his farewell discourse, because after this, people are going to go on under the leadership of Joshua to cross the Jordan River into the Promised Land, and Moses is going to do what? He's going to go off into the mountains to die alone somewhere. We don't have any idea where. But he's doing something very deliberate. He's trying to remind them of what it is they're supposed to have been learning over the last 4 decades. In simple terms, God has been trying to show them, yes, there is a call to faithfulness here, but at the same time, God will provide for your needs as you go. If you recall, in Exodus, they had maybe a day and a half to 2 days' notice that after the death of all the firstborn of the Egyptians, that Pharaoh was going to say, hey, you guys, get out of here. You imagine they figured about 600,000 men over the age of 20, then add in their wives, their children, other unmarried young men and women. You're talking somewhere around probably 1 million people who are suddenly going to find themselves on the move. And you're going to be traveling for who knows how long, and there's no Harris Teeter. There's no Food Lion. There's no quarter gas station with the food aisle in it. You know, there's just nothing along the way. And you only have the opportunity to pack whatever food you happen to have in your home at the time. And you're going to head off to, you're going to the Promised Land. Is there a map? No, just go where I tell you to go. Try to picture yourself in that situation. Sounds a little challenging. Because what's the first problem that they run into after they get across the Red Sea, after God has parted it for them to get away from the Egyptians? They start to run out of food. And even after having seen the 10 plagues and the parting of the Red Sea, when they encounter the next problem, running out of food, they just immediately turn to God. Hey, God, we need some food. Can you help us out? Now, what do they do? What do you do when you encounter a problem? Especially an unexpected one. We moan, groan, complain, argue. It's like, God, what did you lead us out here for? We were better off back in Egypt. So God says, watch this. And the next morning when they get up, what do they find on the ground? It's called manna. Now, some 19th and 20th century scripture scholars, quote unquote, try to pass that off by saying, well, there's this little beetle that lives out in the Middle East that secretes this white stuff. So, it's like bug goo. So their instant response is, oh, manna. Remember what the scriptures say about the manna? It was something that the people were not familiar with, because manna literally translates, what is this? They don't recognize it. Now, people in the Middle East would know about the little bugs with the white goo, so they would have gone, oh, look, bug goo. So they're caught by surprise, and then they ask, Moses, manna, what is this stuff? He said, this is the bread from heaven that God has given for you to eat. What's the message there that Moses is trying to pass on from God to the people? God is going to provide for you. And does so for 4 decades. Every morning, 6 days a week, except for the Sabbath, these white flakes appear on the ground. They don't know where it comes from, except for, as Moses told them, this manna is bread from heaven. And he provides it for the next 40 years. It stops after they cross over the Jordan River into the Promised Land. What's the message in there for us? Notice what Jesus says in the gospel passage. This is the Bread of Life discourse in chapter 6 of John. I am the what kind of bread come down from heaven? Living bread come down. Not just the bread from heaven, but the living bread come down from heaven. You must eat my flesh and drink my blood to have what within you? Life. He who eats my flesh, drinks my blood, will not die. And he's talking eternal death as eternal separation from God. That gets fulfilled where? Hint. The day before Good Friday during Holy Week is called Holy Thursday. And what happened on Holy Thursday? Trying to give you a hint still. The Last Supper, when Jesus does what? He takes that huge, immense 40-year-long sign of manna, bread from heaven in the desert, to provide for the people's physical needs during their journey, and is now making himself the living bread come down from heaven to provide for God's people in their journey through the desert of this world. What is it? You know, what does the church teach us that this bread from heaven is? How many times have you heard me say this? I have to watch these steps. I use this multi-part phrase that what we come forward for communion, we're receiving not a what, but a who? The body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ. Living bread come down from heaven. Our faith in that is really strong, right? You know, what God has been trying to do with the Israelites for 40 years in the desert, 40 years, time of preparation, purification, to begin something new, is like they're going to enter the promised land. He's trying to get them to learn, to understand that whatever your needs are as they come along, I will provide for you what your needs are. They don't really ever get it. And you know what? We don't really get it too well either, do we? Over the course of the last two millennia, there are over 100 recorded Eucharistic miracles that have happened, principally during times when the people's faith in the Eucharist and its reality has grown weak, sometimes for an individual, sometimes for a community. Most recent one was back in March of this year. Church up in Connecticut distributing communion at communion time, and one of the ministers assisting all of a sudden notices that the ciborium, the vessel that the hosts are in, is about to go empty. And there's still a long line of people coming up. He looks down again, and what happened? The ciborium all of a sudden was full again. And nobody brought him a refill. God acted. That's a simple one. There have been other occasions, you know, like over 100 recorded miracles of the Eucharist, where all of a sudden the consecrated host begins to bleed. There are times where the consecrated host literally, visibly turned into flesh. The consecrated wine in the chalice turned into real blood. Whose? This is where it gets kind of complicatedly interesting, because the church has allowed a number of these things, because, you know, not least something like that, you don't throw it away in the trash. It's been preserved in the churches in the areas where it happened. And they've allowed scientists to come in and test. And what do they keep finding out? Now, there's an article about this in the bulletin, if you were reading the bulletin, about some of these Eucharistic miracles. Every time they've tested the blood, either the blood that appeared on the host or when the wine in the chalice turned into real blood, is always what? Human. It has human DNA in it, and it is literally always the same blood type. AB positive, every single time. When the host has fully transformed into tissue, flesh, they have also tested that. It's always human. It is always from the left ventricle of a human heart. And it always shows signs of having been under duress. When, like, if you're about to have a heart attack, you're doing, you know, really forced, strenuous exercise or something, white blood cells go into that heart tissue to try to help heal it, to keep you from doing what? Dying. They find white blood cells impregnated throughout this piece of left ventricle tissue because it shows signs of having come from someone who has been under extraordinary physical duress and suffering, like being scourged and crucified. Normally after death, white blood cells, within about 5 hours or less, white blood cells begin to just disintegrate and disappear. In these cases, the white blood cells are still there, and some of them 15 centuries later. There is a priest in Lanciano, Italy, who his faith in what he was doing at the altar was very weak. And so God said, I'm going to teach you something. So the consecrated wine in the chalice was three big globules of blood, which tested out human type AB positive. The host visibly turned into human flesh, and it's from the left ventricle of a human heart, and the white blood cells are still there. Where am I going with this? Anybody want to guess? How is your faith in the Eucharist, which you are receiving, which is God's provision for you through this desert called planet Earth? It's living flesh. It's not dead. It doesn't decompose even after 15 centuries. I am the living bread come down from heaven. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood will have what? Life within them. We are receiving the living flesh and blood of Jesus in the Eucharist. Now, there's a reason why it still looks like bread and still looks like wine for us. I would not want to see your reaction if I literally put a piece of left ventricle into your hand at communion time. Most of us would be pretty repulsed by that, wouldn't we? You know, here's how merciful God is. His provision for us is profound and extraordinarily merciful because he wants us to receive him to help us through this life. I don't know if you've noticed, but this world is a desert. It is a spiritual desert, wasteland, just like they wandered through for 40 years. All the trials and tribulations, all of the testings, all of the things that God needed to try to purify them of during that journey to prepare them to enter into the promised land. God has taken all of that. It was a foresign of what was about to come with Jesus at the Last Supper and continues to this day and will continue until the end of time. Until Jesus comes again. He was trying to teach them, do not be afraid, do not doubt, I will provide for you. I've got this. Trust me, turn to me, come to me. I will feed you, I will strengthen you, I will heal you. But we need to approach it with what? Here and here. Faith. God has been trying to teach us since Adam and Eve, take me at my word. I desire life for you and life with me. I will get you through this desert. I will help you through all the trials and tribulations, the ones that are self-inflicted and inflicted by others and just because you're human and have a weak body. I will see you through. I will lead you to me, but we have to put our trust in him. That's faith. Trust me. I will provide for you. I will give you all that you need and more. But we have to get past the doubts, the grumbling, the mumbling, the complaining, the letting ourselves be bitten by all the scorpions and poisonous vipers that are on planet Earth amongst human society. Put our trust in him, not in ourselves, and nor in anybody else. I will provide for you. If we could just let those words, if I could pop open your heads and stick in a USB drive and put it into your program of take God at his word, trust him. You will never be without what you need to go through this life. Because God, again, to say this one more time in public, from the very moment you were conceived in your mother's womb, the desire in God's heart was for you to go through this life and come to him for eternity, and he has provided himself to help us through it. Body, blood, soul, and divinity, all contained even in the tiniest crumb of a host or tiniest drop from the chalice. That's all been done for you. Put your faith in him. He will get you home.